You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by GameFly. Come get some. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hadfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne,
hi,
and very special guest from the IGN Australia office, Cam Shea, is joining us.
Hello, guys.
Thank you for making the flight.
It's gotta should be I like, say it's g'day?
It's got to be at least a 5 or 6 hour flight from Australia.
Yeah, right? So multiply that by yeah, you know, really, two or three, and you're in the long, right ballpark.
Do you guys use hours there?
We use feet, but only for measuring height.
Okay.
Everything else is metric. We weigh our drugs according to the metric.
Yeah. Metric hours are weird.
Metric hours. Cam, it took 20 hours for you to get here. You got in this morning, and then you're leaving immediately after this.
Yep.
So thanks just for flew coming in for Scoop.
Just for this recording of GameScoop.
That's more of a sacrifice than we usually make for Scoop. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. True. And can I just say at the top of the show that if I don't make any sense, I'm pretty much on no sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, so well, that's, you that's know.
No sleep, but how many beers?
I declined to drink at lunch, actually, okay. Which is not same. My...
No, you're totally you. Screwed.
Very off-brand for me, okay. But, you know, whatever. I'll catch up later on.
All right.
That's good. I wasn't at that lunch, but I was just drinking at my desk. Yeah. So I'm good. I'm good to go.
You guys do have multiple kegs in this office.
Yeah,
that's true. You're living the dream.
One of them's coffee, though, to be fair.
Coffee keg.
Yeah. The old Guinness.
It's to mix in with the beer.
Yeah.
All right, so Cam, tell us your favorite game of all time.
Ooh, I would have to say right now, Breath of the Wild.
Wow.
Okay. That's the coolest answer I've ever heard.
Because it used to be kind of older stuff. Like, I mean, Doom was hugely influential for me. Street Fighter 2 was hugely influential for me. Wipeout was hugely influential for me. Obviously, I love Super Mario World, Yoshi's Island. I mean, there's so many games, right?
Sure.
But this year, I've sunk 100 hours into Breath of the Wild.
Just this year?
Yeah, I played it last year, but I didn't actually finish it. Okay. I came back to it this year, and I just adore it. I just adore everything about it.
Same.
All the layered systems in that world are just amazing. And even after I've played through it in its entirety a couple of times, I'm just still discovering new things and learning new things and experimenting. And it is just the absolute embodiment of what I want from a video game.
Yeah.
So I love it.
We're not allowed to talk about that game anymore on this show.
Why?
But thank you for bringing it up. We got a lot of complaints back in the day. I'm making a joke, but
we just talked about it a lot because
we had to give it some time.
It's a very significant game.
And now it's back.
Now it's back. Now it's
and
retro.
And this goes to show you just how on top of modern gaming I am right now. So yeah. Also playing Splatoon 2.
Splatoon 2. There you go. All right.
I still play Breath of the Wild. So
yeah, good.
Well, we do have a great show for you this week. We're going to talk a little bit about the big fall gaming season, which I think officially kicks off this week.
Right now. Is this going up on Friday?
Yeah.
It started.
Yeah, it's already here. It's happening. It's happening.
It's actually spring, guys.
Yeah, that's true.
Just letting you know.
Welcome to the spring
gaming
season.
And we call it autumn. Come on. Let's localize. Come on.
You don't use fall ever?
No.
Never fall. Wow. All right. But your spring is on the metric system, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Metric spring.
But first, let's share what we've been playing, which I think for at least a few of us has been Spider-Man,
when
the game.
When exactly is this going up?
Friday.
Okay.
After,
including the audio?
Yeah.
So we can just talk Spider-Man freely.
Yep. That's the whole idea here. Tell us about Spider-Man.
I finished Spider-Man.
Yeah?
Man, that is a great video game.
Great.
Nice.
I finished Spider-Man too, and I think it's a great video game as well.
There you go.
So I think that it's a great superhero game, mm-hmm. which is tough. And I think the only other two great superhero games are Batman Arkham Asylum, which is a city for some people. I understand that. I don't want to argue about that. And then Spider-Man 2. And I think this is takes the best elements of both those games and puts them in its own game.
It definitely,
there's no Batman in it.
It level sets expectations right from the opening mission. Are you playing the game as well, Damon?
Yeah.
Because you were
traveling.
I haven't
finished it, though. Yeah.
So the opening mission is you take down Fisk, and that's sort of the tutorial and also sets up the storyline. And you make it to Fisk's office, who, this isn't much of a spoiler, this is 10 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
And he's been a legitimate businessman, and they finally figured out, you know, he's a mob boss, so he's you know, he's being taken down, and in his office all the columns turn into machine gun turrets, and I'm like, okay, this is gonna be that kind of game. Like, just don't think about, like, it's a very very comic booky game, like bright, and even in its like darkest moment, like, it has real moments of like pathos, but it's always played from like a comic booky perspective. And it's telling a very classic, like, Peter Parker Spider-Man story. And, like, that gun turret moment was, I'm like, all right, okay, I'm on board. Let's just go on this adventure ride, and I'm not going to think about it too much.
Does it nail the Peter Parker story?
It does. It actually does.
I'm definitely on board if they can get that character right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, like, I was more of a Batman kid growing up, so I don't have this experience with Spider-Man comics, but I understand that it's always been about him trying to balance his personal life and his professional life, and he's not wealthy, like, you know, Tony Stark, right? Like, Peter Parker's always had to scrap, and I think that they do a really, really good job of bringing that into a story.
And thank goodness he's not a little kid in it.
Yeah.
He's not just starting out. He's not a little kid. But he's still
young. He's like mid-20s, so they strike a great balance
there. Yeah, that's an interesting era for Spider-Man, which is just, the young Spider-Man's way overtold now because it's been in three different trilogies, you know, basically since we started playing games. And I think it's great to see Peter Parker as like his later self, where he's like interested in you know, research and science, and he's like has like Batman-esque abilities to just make stuff, which is cool. Like, he can make cool gadgets, and you see a lot of those gadgets in the preview stuff. I really like that about it. Where are you at in the game? Are you
only a few hours into it?
So you can talk about all this.
I can talk about the early game stuff, for sure.
I was wondering, are you guys like ultra impressed with the model of Spider-Man? Like, every time the costumes are in frame for me, I'm in disbelief at how good the fabric looks, or the stitching, or like whatever. It's like, or the light bouncing off it. I cannot believe.
He's actually talking about looking down at the Spider-Man costume he's wearing while playing in the game.
Yeah.
It just looks unbelievable.
He's in disbelief at how good he looks in it.
Yeah. Unlike some people, I wear the full Spider-Man outfit. I don't just go topless.
Yeah, nice.
I think the game plays it very, very safe. It's very fun. So some games are more than the sum of their parts, right? Like, they're flawed or sort of maybe not so great in some aspects, but they add up to a whole that is really memorable and you know, fresh. Spider-Man in some ways is kind of the opposite. Like, the combat's really great. I think the missions are pretty great. I think the story's pretty great. But I'm over it. I've finished it, and now it's kind of already in the rearview mirror for me. Like, I don't feel like it's a game that's going to stick with me in any major way. Like, I really, really enjoyed my time with it, but I don't necessarily consider it a classic. I consider it like a very, very, you know, well-made, you know, competent, very fun game that doesn't really do much to push things forward or take any risks.
Well, so in your minds, how does it compare to God of War?
I think I like God of War much more. But I did think Spider-Man was great.
I like Spider-Man more, but I like it because it strives to be, you know, a video game, and it's really gameplay focused, and I like all that. But I think it has some misses with the open world, and I think the open world's super boring.
Right.
And I wanted that from this game. I wanted It feels great. Like swinging feels great. Mm-hmm. Like that's all perfect. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason to stop and look at New York.
Yep.
It's just super easy to do all the just like collectible missions. And it's just, you just blow
it's always
through
the
that.
Downfall of those kind of games.
Manhattan feels very conventional and very much like sort of an old school open world in a way that I think, you know, we'll see how Red Dead shakes out, but it feels like it's trying to, you know, present a little bit of a different. Like I was swinging through the city and there was a rooftop party, right? And I landed in the middle of the party and everybody's dancing and there's a DJ and nobody. They just like kept, and it's like Spider-Man's there. And it's like that's every open world game, right? So I'm picking on Spider-Man a little bit, but you always hope for a more reactive.
And yet you go down to street level and people will high five you on the street. So there is some level
they have
of
that interactive.
Yeah.
All that stuff's great.
Yeah.
So it's not like a Ubisoft open world game, like an Assassin's Creed or a Far Cry, where it's just so densely packed with stuff. Mm-hmm. To do, right? Well, that's
well, you really got to compare stuff like that. That's a step between Breath of the Wild, where like everything you collect is meaningful and interesting and hidden and worth puzzling out. In this game, it's like they try to make it as easy as possible for you to breeze through all the open world stuff. Like seriously, like there's collectibles that you can swing past and like click a button.
Nice.
Like it's really, really simple. I see. There's nothing puzzly or interesting, but it feels so good to hop around and beat up people. And that's what Spider-Man really should be about. Mm. So it's fine. You know, and I prefer the open world to levels anyway, just because getting around is still, it's like actually relaxing and fun to do nothing in that game, just to zip around the city. Yeah. Well, it feels cool.
And the blend of like out of combat and in combat, I'm zipping around, I'm landing, I'm fighting dudes, I'm back in the air.
I like doing that. That's a really good point.
And all that being seamless and it's so impressive and so fun. And it doesn't feel like sort of separate, like, okay, now I'm in fight mode. Now I'm in swing mode.
That's
like
totally true.
It's all one system that's so impressive and polished.
I've got another question for you guys.
Yeah.
Sunset Overdrive versus Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. When you... Because I really love Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, I think I was actually talking to you about this a little bit at lunch, but I think Sunset Overdrive is... I beat it. I love that game. Mm. I think it's oozing with style in both. It's like... It has a great soundtrack by this band Cheap Time. It has like a really good like kind of neon look to it. Mm. And then everything in it is getting around via Tony Hawk style tricking and stuff like that. Spider-Man loses all of that. It has no personality outside of Marvel's personality for Spider-Man, which
that's
is
interesting.
There's these villains and Spider-Man looks like this and that kind of stuff. Like it's very expected. It's not like the neon, cool, different Spider-Man, you know?
I like Spider-Man much more than Sunset. They're both, I think Insomniac's brave. Spider-Man is fairly complicated with its controls. Like you're doing a lot of stuff on the controller and it throws a lot at you. But I don't ever feel like it's overwhelming. Like it strikes a really good balance between I have this whole array of options for combat and ways that I can take people out, but I don't feel like I'm hitting the wrong button or fumbling with it or wrestling with it. Whereas Sunset for me was like one step too far. I had a really hard time like getting into the flow of that game and I sort of feel the evolution of that complex traversal and combat system and what they learned from Sunset. I feel a lot of that in Spider-Man.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I never finished Sunset Overdrive. I remember enjoying my time with it, but just
I remember going into it unbelievably cynical because I was like, this game is just trying so hard to be cool. I'm determined to hate it. And then I played it and just loved it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely. I was worried about that too. And like winning you over. But it's just that they were able to flex a creative muscle in that I don't think was flexed for Spider-Man.
Mm. And that's,
I think it was very traditional.
The way it goes,
Spider-Man.
Right? So
it can be with a license, right?
Yeah.
It's like maybe there's just too much that you're restricted in doing. This game doesn't like, I don't want to go into that right now, actually. I was going to talk about, I'm pissed off at the Marvel. I just think people might consider it a spoiler. I don't.
Yeah.
But I won't go into it. But I think that the Marvel Universe, I was hoping would be a bigger, different, new universe in video games.
Mm.
But it's still very narrow in this game. And that just makes me sad. I grew up with the X-Men and Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and everything all being part of this universe.
Yeah.
And I want that to be part of games. Mm. And I know Spider-Man has his own universe and he'll always be part of that. But I just... whatever expansions you'll find in that game, like I always want more, so I'll never be satisfied.
Actually, I wonder, I'm curious, just on the business side, what are they allowed to use and show, and what are they not? Not that I want that informing, like it's always sad when like, you know, business concerns sort of inform a game design and story, but just a it's still fascinating. Mm-hmm. Just knowing how the MCU works and they do and don't have the rights to, and then in video game land, how that's shaking out as well.
And we know there's, so there's a Spider-Man game. An Avengers game is probably the next big Marvel game. Well, is that from
I don't think it's been officially announced, but that's been the big rumor.
Oh, so they released that teaser trailer.
There's a trailer for it. Yeah. But it doesn't show anything about it. So like, those are two safe things that have movie series right now. Mm-hmm. But you know, like just a scant, you know, decade ago, we would get like Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which would have Juggernaut and Spider-Man and, you know, that's Human Torch and stuff.
Well, and that's the thing, like also a decade ago, we just got really shit Marvel games from like, you know, Sega, just like bad Iron Man and Wolverine games. So it's like, we've been kind of nitpicking, you know, Spider-Man here on this panel, but that's from the expectations of like massive triple A game of the year contenders. Like, it would have been so easy to make a Spider-Man game way worse than this. Like, we got really bad superhero games for a long time. So,
and I guess Arkham is to thank for that, right? Yeah. It's like, pump the brakes, make a great superhero game. What is that like? And even this game has stealth in it, which I don't associate with
I actually like the stealth.
I do too. I think they pull it off really well because, and I'm trained to kind of be above people stringing them up and stuff from Batman.
And so I guess at least my criticisms of it are coming from the context of like, is this one of the absolute best games of the year? And not like, I always have to remind myself, like, if a team that wasn't as talented and amazing as Insomniac was on this game, like, it would not have turned out as like fantastic and fun as it is.
I'm very impressed.
How long did it take you to blitz through it?
People are saying that they found it to be a little short. I found it to be that's a good question.
Dude, I would actually love you to give me a number on the low side, because I ultimately don't want to spend 40 hours playing big open world.
I think
games.
It was probably 20 hours for me. I'm trying to think. I think I probably played a couple hours a night for like 10 nights, which feels, you know, long. But that's my guess. I don't actually know.
I've been enjoying my time with the game. I agree. The swinging feels really good. You know, you start off swinging right at the beginning of the game, and there's a quick little learning curve, but you pick it up really fast. I think by the time you finish that sort of opening area, you've sort of got a really good handle on it. I like how it opens you up, taking down Fisk like right off the bat. Unfortunately for Spider-Man, I played two other games first. which are super Damien games, and they have totally taken a hold of all of my like gaming thought power. And so every time I'm playing Spider-Man, I'm thinking about these other two games. And they are Into the Breach on Nintendo Switch, which is unbelievable. I played it a little bit on PC this year and was like, yeah, I know I love this game. I'm going to wait for it to come to console.
Yep.
Now that it's on Switch, it feels perfect. And that's the roguelike turn-based strategy game from the guys that did FTL.
Bugs and Bots.
It's like you're in mech suits fighting kaiju in a turn-based roguelike, and it's unbelievable.
Nice.
As a big Advance Wars guy, I know I need to get into the Breach.
Yeah,
it's really, really good. And then also Divinity Original Sin 2 is on consoles now, and that is an incredible RPG that's like...
Are you playing as the Skull Man? Are you the Skeleton Man?
Dwarf. Or like the undead. The undead dwarf is who I started
off. Oh, I didn't know he was... Okay.
Yeah, whoa. You can be an undead dwarf.
That's specific.
But you have to conceal yourself from humans, or else they're going to freak out and not trust you.
You can literally get something that cuts off people's faces and you can wear their face.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
So, yeah, say goodbye to how much of your time?
I know. So it's like both these two games. So it's nothing. It's not a knock against Spider-Man. It's just these games gotten their hooks in me already. So I've been spending a lot more time with that. But Cam, what have you been playing?
Have you played Donut County yet?
No. That's the Katamari.
Katamari-ish.
You move a whole around. It is like Katamari,
So I reviewed it for the site pretty recently. It's pretty interesting. I mean, the pitch is kind of you play as a hole and you swallow things. And if they find things that fit, they fall down, hole gets bigger, and you know.
Yeah.
So you kind of imagine that Katamari path where you're eventually swallowing up the entire world. But what's really interesting about it is that that pitch alone like will sell me on that game because there's so much puzzle potential in that pitch. But what's interesting about it is because it's basically the work of one guy, Ben Esposito, with a little bit of help from a couple other people. But his personality is just writ large in this game. And he's done a whole lot of really quirky titles in the past, like some kind of fun throwaway games. Like, do you remember... it was like Room of a Thousand Snakes or something.
That was him?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Room of a Thousand Snakes.
And you go in there and you press a button and like and a thousand Bohemian snakes Rhapsody come out. Starts playing or something, and then just snakes, and then you die. And that's it.
Cool.
But yeah, he's actually taken this kind of cool core puzzle mechanic and wrapped it in a narrative-driven game. I mean, to some extent. There's cutscenes between every level.
Yeah, with like cool-looking animals, too. They're designed really neat.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
Shady visual designs.
Yeah, all the just shady raccoons.
They just like donuts, though.
All the way through, yeah.
I did play the first hour or so of Donut County before it got Spider-Man for me.
Right.
And so, mm-hmm. and I was really surprised with, as you said, all the personality and the stuff in between the missions doesn't feel like filler that I'm just trying to skip through as fast
as
possible.
It's very endearing.
It's really compelling.
And it's kind of an interesting commentary on like gamification as well, because the raccoon is using an app to control the holes, and so there's this kind of weird meta commentary in there as well.
And that game's out now?
Yeah.
Donut
County is an indie game. It's the equivalent of, like, it was shown at the indie game circuit, you know, at every indie game event for like ever. For years. It was
like
one of those
literally like 4+ years, I'd say.
And then, Sam, you saw it at E3, right?
Yeah, Annapurna's publishing it.
Okay, yeah.
And in their booth, that was where I actually met the Katamari creator, and he had his new game there, Watam. And
I'm
those were like
that as well.
Yeah, they were like right next to each other, and they were both like crazy toys.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see those two developers interact, but I never got to see it.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want to actually say too much because it's a very short game.
I see.
And a lot of the fun of it is discovering how you can take a hole and build, you know, more mechanics around it, you know, interact with the world using a hole and not just drop stuff into it. So play it. It's cheap and you'll smash through it in a couple of hours and your life will be enriched, damn it.
There you go.
It's on every platform. I think it's $5 on like iOS. So pick it up there if nowhere else. Like, it's totally good.
I'll keep it quick, but I also played WarioWare Gold and it's my favorite game this year.
WarioWare Gold on 3DS?
Well, I don't think it's the best game this year. It's just my favorite.
That's fine. Yeah.
It's just a great WarioWare game.
Yeah?
It's in 3DS.
Yeah.
You can just play it. But I just can't believe there's a WarioWare game.
But you played it all by yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because I think of WarioWare as a multiplayer game.
I played the party one on GameCube a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
It's mostly been single player.
My old pals, 9Volt and Ashley, were there.
Okay. Good.
There's all those WarioWare characters. They're crazy.
They're so crappy. Orbulon is like just...
Orbulon?
They're so dumb.
Yeah, they're completely nuts, and it's just so funny to see them back. And I will say, this game has great localization, and it's very funny. And I couldn't believe how good Wario is in it.
Doesn't he draw each amiibo or something silly like
that? Yeah, he does. Yeah. Well, a handful of them, at least.
That's one of the toys in the game. That's great.
Can I do one more?
Yeah, I was going to say that you've been playing something else after Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, finished Spider-Man, and I am absolutely addicted and hooked on Yakuza. I'm playing through Yakuza Kiwami, which is a remake of the very first game, so it's a PS2 game that's 10 years old.
Some good dancing in that game, right?
Yeah,
I don't know that Kiwami has dancing, but it has karaoke.
Karaoke, okay.
It's really, really wonderful. It's, I think what a lot of people, it gets called like Japanese Grand Theft Auto, but it's completely not accurate at all. It's a brawler at heart. So every single, you know, conflict and side story and whatever ends in like, you know, a combo based, you know, 3D fighting game almost. Mm-hmm. You against like a group of people and you improvise, you pick up like chairs and stuff and swing them at people.
Is it like Batman combat a little bit?
Not really, because it's not timing based. It's more combo based.
Gotcha.
What I like about it is the open world is very small, but very, very dense.
Mm.
And all the systems are interconnected. So there's restaurants everywhere. And I didn't understand. I'm like, why is there a sandwich restaurant here and a ramen restaurant here? But they heal you. And then when you eat food, you also get experience. And when you walk around the world, you also just encounter side quests in the world. And so you end up in this really, really wonderful loop of, you know, I'm hurt, I'm going to go over here and heal. That starts a side quest, and I'm meeting a new character, and that's also leveling me up, and I'm learning the neighborhood, and I feel like I exist in this space in a way that I don't feel in very many other games. And the space is also pretty small. Like,
yeah.
It's, I don't know, 8 or 10 city blocks. But it's... I'm addicted, man. I'm playing it every evening.
Is this the first time you dipped into this series?
Yeah. I mean, I had the very original one on the PS2, but like it couldn't, you know, it just looked like a blocky mess. Mm. Even back then, I was just like, I can't even hardly tell what's in front of my face. And so
it's just so cool that this series is kind of picking up steam with re-releasing.
It just happened
old
like within the last
titles.
Couple years, right?
Yeah.
Well, they released Zero, which sort of like rebooted the franchise. Okay. And then they did a remake of 1 and 2, which were the oldest ones.
Hmm.
And then they're like a up-resed version of 3, 4, and 5 are coming. Mm. And so we've gotten a Yakuza game every 6 months in the West. But now, like, that party's over, man. Like, we're all caught up now. And now the new fans have to wait another 2 or 3 years, like, you know, like everybody else for a new game.
Yep.
Bummer.
It's, dude, it's... I'll have more to say next week, I think.
Oh, wow.
Some crazy side quests in the
And there's crazy side quests.
We'll get an update next week. Before we get too far away from Spider-Man, we have an email here from Danny in Kansas. She writes in and says, I don't know about you, but my body is ready for Spider-Man on PS4. I've been playing through my collection of old superhero games like Spider-Man on PS2, Deadpool, and Arkham City. So here's my question. If you could have a new video game featuring any superhero or villain who hasn't already had their own game, which hero would you choose, and how would their powers be utilized in the game mechanics? I would want a Venom game that will have similar mechanics to a Spider-Man game, but I can run around causing trouble and having police chases, like in GTA.
That's a good question. Yeah.
My favorite superheroes growing up were always Wolverine and The Punisher. And
yeah.
Both of those have gotten pretty good video games. The Punisher has... What's up?
Only on NES, though.
Only on NES. Well, they both had NES games, but The Punisher had a really good arcade game, which is either Capcom or Konami, because it was like a typical like side-scrolling Final Fight style. That was really good. Yeah. And then there was a Punisher game in 2005 that almost got an AO rating because of like how gruesome its like interrogation scenes were. That game was pretty good, too. And the Wolverine got a good video game in 2007, I think. Oh, that was actually really violent. Well,
okay.
It was. I think we gave it a 7, and I feel like that's pretty good. It's like,
yeah, that was good for the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was playable.
And it was surprising. You know, there had been Wolverine in movies, but they're all PG-13, and that game at the time was rated M, and it was actually cool to have it violent.
We recently went back to that game in our office just for a piece of content we didn't end up publishing, but it was, we were playing it going, yeah, this is all right.
It's all right.
Yeah. It's not great, but not bad. Question, has Lobo had a game? Because that would probably be my pick for a character that could just exist in a really mental, crazy, violent game.
Is Lobo blue?
No, he's white.
Who's Lobo?
Like a DC space motorcycle rider.
Wow.
Yeah, just this guy who kills people in very extreme, violent ways.
That could be a good video game.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a natural fit for me.
I think I don't necessarily have the gameplay mechanics figured out, but I think Moon Knight is a good candidate to get a video game adaptation. He's basically Batman, but with magic powers. He's got like a couple magic weapons.
Cool.
And what I like about Moon Knight is, you know, in 2018, it's actually crazy hard to come up with like an original idea for a superhero, right? Spider-Man the game has a Black Cat side mission where Black Cat's absolutely just Marvel Catwoman. Like, it's the exact same character, whereas Moon Knight actually gives me something fresh, like, you know, a man that exists at the nighttime in a big city and is very Batman-esque, but with magic. Yeah. I'm like, that's a really good hook.
If they wanted to revisit Wolverine in a video game, I could see something in the movie Logan, giving it the God of War treatment where you're traveling
with X-23,
long periods of like dialogue and exposition punctuated with really brutal.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Let's green light that right
cool.
now.
Cool, let's get that one. Yep. We'll fast track that one. All right then, so with the fall/spring gaming
slash
season.
Whatever, I'm so sorry.
Officially kicked off, what games are you most anticipating coming for the rest of the year?
You don't have a list handy, dude.
Well, there's a Red Dead Redemption game.
Yeah, well, that's
the
obvious one.
Yeah, it's got to be Red Dead.
There's a Tomb Raider. There's a Fallout. There's a Battlefield. There's a Call of Duty. There's a Mega Man.
Yeah, I was really anticipating Spider-Man. It's kind of funny to be thinking about where we are right now. And I remember saying that on this show, too. But I think, you know, you nailed it. I'm really just looking forward to Red Dead and Fallout at this point.
For me, it's got to be Red Dead as my most anticipated. Even if Fallout 76 turns out to be excellent, which, you know, it's Bethesda. Like, you know, in all likelihood, it will be excellent. It's just so different and such a different spin on the franchise that it's hard for me to, you know, put it at the top of my hype list. Whereas Red Dead, I completely believe in, you know, Rockstar North and Rockstar San Diego's ability to deliver on just a new take on an open world. And I'm totally loving everything I'm hearing about, you know, the world being reactive and people having a place in the game that they exist in. And, and the exact opposite of what I was saying with Spider-Man, where, you know, the NPCs aren't real people to any degree. Like, I do feel like that's the next evolution of open world gameplay, because the worlds themselves have reached a limit for how detailed they can get. But the inner mind of like the NPCs, like that's where there's a lot of room for continued development.
Yeah. Red Dead for you, Cam?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a game that I will dedicate probably a week of my, I don't know. I'm going to find a way to make it work at home and at work because, I don't often play huge games anymore. I prefer kind of more bite-sized indies or games I can dip in, dip out, you know, Hearthstone, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But Red Dead's the exception to the rule, obviously. Because it's going to be amazing.
How are you feeling about Fallout 76?
I'm not hugely interested, to be honest. I've played a fair few, you know, spent a fair bit of time with Fallout games in the past, but I prefer experiences that, as I said, are short and surprise me. That's why the indie scene is so fertile.
Yeah.
You know, there's just pop stuff that just pops up on your radar. Oh, totally. And
it's all on Switch now. Ah.
Yeah, does something different.
It is on Switch.
Has interesting ideas in the mechanics. I'm not saying that the bigger budget games don't have that, but I can play like a bunch of those in the time I could spend with one AAA title.
I'm disappointed that Nintendo games aren't the ones I'm looking forward to. I mean, I think Let's Go
Smash
looks pretty cool for people, for Pokemon, and then Smash, obviously. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's not the
same.
They
just don't have a big, they don't have a big, like, single player.
Yeah.
A Mario Odyssey coming out this fall.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Pokemon is intended to be, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Cam, I have a tendency to swing back and forth and, you know, every 6 months or so between, you know, a bunch of indie games that'll show me some brand new idea that I've never seen before. It's super weird, but they're also rough around the edges and kind of don't, they keep you at arm's length. They don't care that much if you're having like a really wonderful time with it. They're like, here's this art that I made, you know, please enjoy it. And then I'll swing back around to like a really big budget, safe, like, we're going to put you on these guide rails and have you this really guided, polished, amazing experience. And then I sort of bounce around. I've been doing that my whole gaming career between, you know, weird stuff and safe stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good way to approach
it. I don't want
to
make this discussion seem like there's just not other games to look forward to, because I think Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed, Battlefield, Call of Duty, I think there's going to be interesting moments in all those games. And
I'm actually really looking forward to Assassin's Creed Odyssey myself. We keep seeing, you know, everything we've seen about that game since E3 has been really cool to me.
Yeah.
How much hands-on time have you spent with it at this
point? Oh, none.
No. Okay.
Just like, you know, seen the previews and the trailers and all that. And had several demos on IGN Live, E3, and at Gamescom, but I haven't actually played it myself yet. But I did play a lot of Origins, and I think they're leaning even more into RPG mechanics with this one. So that one's looking really cool.
And we, I name-dropped it briefly, but Smash, besides Red Dead, Smash is the other one for me this fall. And what's interesting is I'll probably not play the... We'll play that in the office. Maybe since if it's on Switch, we will actually get a lot of multiplayer time in. Yeah. But I intend on mostly Smash 4 on Wii U. I played almost exclusively single player. And that challenge wall that had like whatever, 100 challenges or whatever to complete. And there were like four or five really distinct, interesting, unique single player modes in it between, you know, the sandbags and the targets and the sort of ticket mode with the challenges and the single player campaign. And it has this reputation, well deserved, as just a polished, amazing multiplayer party game. But I think it's underrated as just, you know, there's a lot for you to chew through single player as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, we have an email here from Hector from, what is it? It's not Placentia, California, is it? Certainly it's not pronounced that way.
Placentia.
Placenta.
Thanks.
That's why, Placentia? I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. But Hector says, I had a question regarding Assassin's Creed games. They've been around for a long time, but I never got into them. Lately, I've been debating about giving those games a try. I wanted to play Origins, but I feel I may be a little lost since I've never played any games in the series. What do you think the best approach is when starting a new series? Should I just play the newest one or try to start from the beginning? Thanks for your help and keep up the awesome work. In this case, I think it's probably perfectly fine to start with Origins since it's the origin.
Or Black Flag.
Well, I mean, that's another good option. But at least this one takes place earlier than any of the other games. They're not referencing...
For Assassin's Creed, the story is incomprehensible.
That's actually true.
Across the mini games. Within a game, it's usually okay.
So maybe the answer to the question is, well, what do you want from your Assassin's Creed game?
Yeah.
If you're more into the RPG mechanics, then that's what the most recent couple of games have been doing. If you want to sail the seas and
those are good,
you know, be a pirate, then Black Flag is one of the most revered games of the series.
I wasn't too enamored with Origins, but I do think as like a jumping on point, it's a good one because that's the new, like this is what Assassin's Creed is now, right? Like, like the old games are very different. Like they're mechanically very different and a lot faster and, you know, they weren't RPGs. And so Origins, if you choose to jump in there, will set you up to better understand sort of where the franchise is going moving forward.
Yeah.
I just tweeted about how I get a lot of OCD about starting in the middle of franchises, and it's sort of been a problem for me my entire gaming career where there's franchises that I didn't jump on at the beginning, and it's like, I don't know, like Metal Gear Solid 5, like I'll feel like I can't play that. I have to play 1 through 4 first. But then sometimes, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 1's amazing, but sometimes the original game's like mediocre, and I end up bailing on the mediocre game halfway through, and I don't even get to the game that I wanted to play in the first place.
Wait, so this is something you actually do?
All
right, this is it. I gotta go back to Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah.
What's an example of doing that and being like, well, that was so worth it?
Yeah, Yakuza.
Yakuza, yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of franchises like I don't play the Mass Effect games because I feel like I would have to slog through Mass Effect 1 again, which I played at launch. I did happen to keep up with the Assassin's Creed franchise, but that would be an example. Like, I'd be so paralyzed for, like, I don't want to jump into this in the middle that it would stop me from, like, jumping into something new.
I reckon that's definitely an exception to the rule scenario. Because for me, like, Assassin's Creed, I've had a love-hate relationship with. I mean, I reviewed a couple of the earlier games for IGN way back in the day and really enjoyed them. I think, like, Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood. Brotherhood.
And that's the one that people like the most.
Brotherhood's great. But I definitely had Assassin's Creed fatigue, particularly because it was evolving, but it still felt very familiar, even if it's in a different setting. So I'm envious to our emailer because you get to start afresh. You get to enjoy Assassins with a fresh set of eyes, and you'll have a great time. They're excellent games.
I think, you know, comic books are sometimes very good, sometimes not so good at giving you new jumping on points. Like, you know, Spider-Man's been around for 50 years or whoever. I don't know how long. And they'll design sometimes literally like with a new number one, like jump in at Spider-Man or, you know, new story arc. They give you ways to sort of ease into this, whereas video games seem to kind of not really care. They're like, well, you know, figure it out. Like, I think they should do more to recap the story so far, or like some RPGs like Dragon Age does like prequel comics and stuff like that.
That's true.
I think there's room to do more there in video games.
My advice would be go to IGN's wikis and watch the walkthroughs of every single Assassin's Creed game.
Right.
Yeah. Make sure to watch the pre-roll.
Yeah, watch the advertisement first, please.
And enjoy. You know, just soak up, I don't know, a couple of weeks of your life. And IGN's done a service.
I recommend going to the one that's regarded by critics as the best one. And then going back and playing, if you really like that one, try some others. Because if you think about Zelda that way, and if you played Breath of the Wild or Ocarina of Time first, it's really, I played Ocarina of Time, like basically that was the first Zelda I ever beat. And so then I went back and played, finished Link to the Past or like Zelda 2 or whatever, and I found all those references that I didn't know that Ocarina was making, and it was really exciting.
But see, then that's the sense that I feel like I'm missing out. Like, I used to be a lot more neurotic about gameplay and just in general as a person. Then I had kids, and I'm like, I don't have time for any of that anymore. I'm just going to play whatever I want. But, like, this is the one holdover. Like, even if there's no story connections, like in Zelda, like, who cares? You're still missing callbacks and even, you know, musical cues and other things like that.
Those can go two ways, though, because you can experience the original thing afterwards and then put it all together.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any less satisfying. Like, I'm watching Better Call Saul before I've ever watched Breaking Bad.
You maniac.
But that makes a lot of sense because it's a prequel.
Yep. It's like, and all Zelda games, like, are prequels as far as we know.
Quality aside, if someone today were starting with Star Wars and they wanted to start with the prequels, you know, that makes a lot of sense too.
No, it doesn't. The prequels are absolutely constructed with context of the original trilogy
in
mind.
So? Wow.
Otherwise, who gives a shit that, yes, and you will be Boba Fett, da-da, and it's like, okay, who the hell is that? That means nothing to me. Like,
maybe it does work, though. I'd have to watch them with my brain wiped.
Yeah.
You see these debates on, like, long-running franchises. Where should I jump in? Should I start with the chronologically first one first or the release order first? And the answer is always release order, because that's how everyone else experienced it.
Well,
if you're determined to get through like all of something,
yeah,
don't read the prequel book first.
It certainly stands for the Hobbit movies.
Ugh.
Ugh. What Hobbit movies?
Yeah. Okay.
GameScoop is sponsored by Gamefly, the best way to buy and rent your favorite games. Gamefly.com gives you access to 9,000 titles, which are mailed directly to your door. For one monthly fee, you can play the latest and greatest games for as long as you want, with no late fees or due dates, ever. When you get tired of a game, all you have to do is mail it back, and they'll send you the next title on your list. Today, every Scoop listener gets access to a free premium 30-day trial by going to Gamefly.com/Scoop. That premium trial lets you rent two titles at the same time, and you get it by going to Gamefly.com/SCOOP. Gamefly.com/scoop. Check it out.
This is Scott Phillip in Mukilteo, Washington. And he's got a little bit of a long one. Bear with me. He says, "Hey there, guys. I'm getting a late start on Far Cry 5. I've been having a good time with the game so far. However, one thing that is jarring to me is the number of F-bombs the game is dropping. I've never been a fan of copious expletives in any kind of conversation, but this game seems to be worse about it than most I've played in recent memory. I've got a daughter on the way. Perhaps it's making me conscious of this issue. After a few hours of listening to all this swearing, I went into the game's option menu to see if there was any option to reduce or censor the expletives, but of course, no such luck. As a soon-to-be parent, content filter options are now something I would find incredibly valuable. If the game is still a bit too much for a younger audience, at least I wouldn't have to worry about my daughter's first words being of four-letter length. Feels to me like content filtering of language would have minimal impact on the design resources required to implement this feature and would allow the gritty and mature game to still be played by those who want it, while myself and other parental units could play the reduced vulgarity version of the game. What do y'all think about this? With so many gamers becoming parents, do you think a content filter option would be useful on M-rated games?
Obviously, yes, but I think you're laboring under the illusion that you're going to have any time to play video games after your child is born.
There is that, too.
Because the reality is, man, you're about to flip the table of your life and lose a fair bit of time. It's going to be great. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be great, but... Yeah. Limited time.
Well, and also, it's like Far Cry 5 in particular, it's a tremendously, you know, nihilistic and violent and like horrible game that like the idea that, you know, his daughter is going to be like, oh, but we can't say the F word, but the shotgun to the face.
Yeah. I think even if she's just hearing it, I mean, okay, you might bleep the swearing, but you're still hearing gunshots and screams and like
I lit a bear on fire.
Yeah.
So maybe you play it muted and turn the subtitles on. That would not work.
I think
by the
content filters are a super good idea. You know, it's an M-rated game, so I expect swearing, I expect violence, but different people have different things that set them off or that they don't like. And so, I'm going to go back to Yakuza as an example. You can turn the gore on or off. Like, you're still punching dudes and knocking them out, but whether they spit up blood, like, that's a toggle in the menu. Like, when you have a game that has every menu option under the sun, like turn on colorblind mode, you know, turn on this, turn on that, like, an option to bleep swears. You know, I'm sensitive to games not having unlimited time and unlimited budget. But, yeah, I mean, it feels like there's at least as many people that would be interested in that as, like, a colorblind option.
But particularly, I mean, I'm an Australian, so obviously I swear an inordinate amount. And it's just the way we do things. But I'm sensitive to gratuitous swearing, for sure. If it feels out of place or if it feels just unnecessarily excessive, then, yeah, maybe there should be an option to pick and choose.
Yeah. Certainly it would be more work for the developer, but you know, it's, they've been censoring movies on television, you know, since forever. So
it's funny you can't turn that on DVDs or anything, right? Is that right?
I haven't seen that as a feature on,
you know, it's funny that how little that is offered when we're now in a digital era. Of course you can offer the censored version of everything.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's smart business wise. You know what you can do? Here's a little hack. Just switch the language and play it with subtitles.
That's actually a really smart one, yeah. Mm. Turn it on to French or Spanish and then just turn on English.
In the case of your
game, turn on English subtitles and
Or just avoid content with swearing. For instance, you know, I love that song Fudge the Police. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh boy. Does Donut County have swearing in it?
No.
That's a good question. No. Hmm. I don't think so.
Cam just mentioned of how much less time for gaming one has once they become a parent. We were talking about that last week on the show, about how getting older you find yourself having less and less time to game. But Dogman52 writes in to say, I recently watched episode 495, and there seems to be a lot of listeners in their 30s that are concerned they have very little time for gaming. I'm here to give you hope. I'm a 51-year-old lifetime gamer. I have the financial security to purchase any and all games I want, tons of free time to play them now that I've raised my two kids and I have an empty nest. I've had the most fun ever now that I have both the money and free time to get my game on.
Oh, bless you.
So it comes back around.
So in her 50s, it's going to be great.
There's definitely... Do you ever have that thing where it's like you're doing something really crappy and then you fantasize like, look, when I get home, I'm just going to put on my PJs and I'm going to lay on the couch and not move for 10 hours.
Yeah.
And usually you end up not doing that, right? Yeah. But it's like that fantasy is what helps you get through the crappy chores or thing that you have to do. That's what having kids is like when they're 18.
Yep.
Oh, boy. It's going to be so great.
You have kids, but they don't live with you.
They don't live with me because I can call them up. How's college going? Great.
Cool.
I'm going to go play.
How's college going? Grunt.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm going to go play Halo 8.
Yeah.
I think, like, kind of, and as an extension to this conversation, like, the era of gaming we live in is also problematic because you can deep dive on a single game and have it consume your entire life, right? So it's not just that we're time poor. It's that games as services and the communities that surround those games and all the discussion around it and the content that's being generated around it means that, yeah, if you're really into a particular game, then that kind of shuts off other opportunities too.
Exactly.
I find it kind of overwhelming sometimes because I really love deep diving in a game and its community because you get so much out of it.
This stuff, it's made me a lot more conscious of how I spend my time and trying not to waste my time. I feel like I never had the feeling of I don't have enough time for all my hobbies and all the things that I've enjoyed. Mm. But as I got older, I've had to let go of, like, you know, Magic the Gathering. I had to choose between, like, comic books or Magic the Gathering as, like, my C-tier hobby. And, like, Magic got the boot. Like, right, there's Magic. Not enough hours in my week to keep up with all the stuff that I want to keep up with.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so if I want to have at least a superficial knowledge of, like, what's happening with Batman, like, something else had to go.
You need to clone yourself is pretty much the
solution. Clone yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
Say, yo,
so we're getting, this is like the sci-fi episode. Sam's gonna wipe his mind, Justin's gonna clone himself.
Yeah, I would some people have gross fantasies about being able to freeze time, but if I could freeze time, boy, I'd just read every comic and keep up with the Magic metagame.
You would geek out.
Get back into Hearthstone.
I love the idea. You freeze time, and then when you unfreeze it, you're like the best Magic pro in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, it's September. That means it's time to hit the retro magazine rack here in the office. This month we have the September 1997 issue of Nintendo Power. This was the 100th episode or 100th issue of Nintendo Power.
97. Are we getting close to like Ocarina back then?
Well, so yeah. So this is September 97, a little more than a year before Ocarina of Time was released.
Mm. This is one of those weird occurrences in which Mario has like a 3D model that was never used.
Yeah.
It was like really expensive to make.
Yeah.
And it looks better now in video games than it did in the CG version that they tried.
I'm trying to think. Was 97 like the dark days of the it's like it's pre-Ocarina, you know.
Is this
so it's
ad
like
era? Sorry, go answer his question first.
This is the N64 was out. It was a year old, so GoldenEye was out.
GoldenEye was the big thing.
Yeah,
where we like Shadows of the Empire stuff like that. All right, let's
go. Shadows of the Empire. But on the cover, you got the 100 best games of all time.
Whoa,
100.
Oh, I can't wait.
Where's Sonic the Hedgehog on that?
I know. I love how just the 100 best games of all time.
Nintendo Power.
100 coolest codes ever. That's of particular interest.
That's a great.
That is a great feature.
But then 100. GoldenEye killer ambushes. I don't really know.
One of those two things.
100 places to ambush people in this one game. I don't know about
that. That game doesn't really have amp. Like, I don't even understand.
Does it have ads in it from other people?
I don't know if they started ads. I don't think so. I think they're just like house ads.
I thought they did have. I thought Nintendo Power, it was the official eventually Nintendo magazine, but I didn't think Nintendo made it. I thought like Future made it.
It was much later that Nintendo stopped doing it, and then they had like ads and everything. Yeah.
So anyway, before you get to the top game, just quickly around the table, what are your favorite N64? What is your favorite N64 game?
Oh, Mario 64.
Yeah, Mario 64.
Okay, Ocarina of Time.
It's hard to.
Yeah.
So those are both great.
Did you answer?
I think I'd have to say Mario, but I mean, obviously, GoldenEye consumed a hell of a lot of time as well.
We begin in the player's pulse, the letters section. We have a letter from Cynthia in Michigan City, Indiana. And she said, the Super NES and now the N64 are my ways of bonding with my nephews, Ben, Adam, and Jake, 7-11-13. I'm 47. They live in Kansas, and I live in Indiana. My best friend, 48, previously a nun of 22 years, and now a high school teacher and professional clown, and I, a crane operator and clown, play Nintendo games all the time. This is how our letter starts. It's a great way for Melody to bond with her students and for us to bond with our young audiences when we talk to them.
Wait, clown students?
Today, I am known to my nephews as the Nintendo Aunt. You've been a great help for bridging two generations and hopefully three generations in the future.
It's very heartwarming.
Yeah.
I don't like the clown
And that stuff. Woman turned out to be a serial killer.
Magazines had a limited space, but they had time to shout out those three kids by name.
Yep. On page 8 here, they have a brief history of Nintendo timeline. It begins in 1889 when Fusajiro Yamauchi founds his gaming company specializing in playing cards. Then we jump to 1980.
Good.
When Nintendo introduces Game & Watch.
91 years later.
81, Donkey Kong debuts in arcades. 85, the NES along with Rob the Robot And the light zapper shoot into Sora, so they ignore Famicom.
And they skip the love tester and all that stuff.
89, it's a boy, Game Boy is born. 91, the Super NES storms onto the scene. 94, Super Game Boy brings Game Boy to your television. 96, the Nintendo 64. What did they skip, Sam?
They skipped the Virtual Boy.
And 97, the Rumble Pack shakes things up. And that's it. That's the brief history of Nintendo.
That is highly abridged.
Founding of Nintendo, Rumble Pack.
Yep. then on page
hey,
11
Howard
here,
and Nestor.
They're going over some like old memories from old issues, and then they mentioned, I'd forgotten about this. You remember the Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest cover was controversial?
Yeah, because of the severed head.
It's a real photo of a model dressed up as Simon Belmont holding Dracula's head.
Wow.
And they also had a real cow heart.
It's awesome.
In the scene. Wow. Because like finding the heart in the game was like one of the things you had to do.
It's funny to imagine that, you know, Per Schneider in a young N64.com was operating at this time. They were already up
in 97. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's true. And they also have a preview of Zelda 64.
I remember those old screenshots. All that stuff that's not in the game.
They're calling it Zelda 64 a little more than a year from release.
Mm. Is there stuff that's not in the game? Oh, the palm trees, right?
The palm trees there? Yeah, maybe.
It's coming to Project Reality.
That's the Gerudo Desert.
I like this intro. It says, up until now, trying to get news out of Shigeru Miyamoto on Zelda 64 has been like trying to get light out of a black hole. No more. We pinned down the master and got some tantalizing tidbits about the master's masterpiece for our exclusive N64 preview.
Cool.
Wow.
They do call Ocarina of Time the master's masterpiece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
We called it that too.
Yeah. I love this. On page 28, there is a preview of Conker's Quest. Not Conker's Bad Fur Day.
So this is the...
This is Conker's Quest. Before
this
it was
is the
totally...
64 one too. It's not the Game Boy one. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is we're in 64.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Before, does it say it's by Rare?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's just like a totally generic mascot platformer that didn't have any of the raunchy humor in it. Yeah. It's pretty good. What we got here? Oh, yeah. They put together a list of 100 other things that equal 100. Things like it's the hit points Palom has when he joins your party in Final Fantasy II.
Palom and Borum.
Yeah. It's the number of species of worm lizards, excluding Earthworm Jim.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's the trivia points you need to get 10 bonus trivia points in NBA hang time.
Oh, we all knew that.
This is the most pointless.
There's lots of jokes about the Barbie games in here. It's the points you score for matching your clothes in the dressing room of Barbie Supermodel.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So it goes on like that for 100 line items. And here we go. The 100 best codes ever. What do you think is number one?
Gotta be the Konami code.
Yeah, obviously. It's
do they attribute it to Gradius or Contra?
Numerous games.
Konami classic like Contra, Life Force, and Gradius. I don't think they actually say the first one that it was used in.
100 codes is a really good feature. I kind of want to steal this for IGN.
It's pretty good. The Justin Bailey code is in here.
Yeah.
It turns Samus into a woman. Did you know that?
Whoa.
Did it say that?
Wait a sec.
No, another magazine said that.
Oh, that's
that was
right.
Like an early EGM. They printed it as a code that turns Samus into a woman. There's like the big head code and
NBA Jam.
Yeah. Mm. NBA. Well, they're calling it NBA Hang Time in here. I don't really remember that one. That's a
yeah. Hang Time was the follow up to Jam, right after Jam that came to systems.
Weird. And then here we go. The 100 best games of all time. I'll count down the top 10. Mm-hmm. How about that? So this is what Nintendo Power thought the 100 best games of all time were in 1997. Mm-hmm. Number 10, Street Fighter II Turbo.
Yep.
Yeah,
solid.
Fair.
Yep.
It's probably still
it's in my top 10.
It's still a top 10 candidate.
Number 9, Final Fantasy II.
Yeah.
They were calling it 2, so it would have been, what is that?
4.
4?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Number 8, Final Fantasy III.
But at the time.
Yeah.
Slash 6.
It's pretty
six.
Thick.
6 is legit.
Number 7, GoldenEye.
Oh, boy.
They're ready to call that the 7th best game of all time.
Of all, better than Final Fantasy VI, GoldenEye. Yep.
Number 6, Super Metroid.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Keep that one. Number 5, Super Mario Bros. 3.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah.
Number 4, Mario Kart 64.
Ooh.
Because that was the latest and greatest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 3, Tetris. Number 2, A Link to the Past. And number 1, Mario 64.
Wow. Yeah. Already calling it for Mario 64.
Yeah. So obviously,
no Mario World.
Turok Dinosaur Hunter 25.
Yep, that was number 25.
No Mario World, right?
Mario World is number 16. Yeah. It's hard to even make out what some of these numbers are because of the extreme font that they're using here.
It looks like they numbered it with Pogs.
I'm such a sucker for top 100 lists.
Yeah, they're really fun.
Love this stuff.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Number 8, number 90, or page 98. Number 69 is Double Dragon. Mm-hmm. Now, the NES Double Dragon is not very good.
No.
But 10 years later, Nintendo Power didn't remember that. They say Billy and Jimmy Lee kicked every butt they encountered.
Yeah, Bimmy and Jimmy.
Kicked every butt they encountered in this classic butt-kicking game in which two butt kickers could kick butts simultaneously. But that's not even true. You can't play two players in that version. They like to totally forgotten.
You think are they referring to the arcade game?
Well, that's not. I mean,
that's not Nintendo Power.
Their screenshot is from NES.
Weird.
Yeah, anyway. That's just a little bit of a look at
those silly fools in the past.
The 100th issue.
Cam, we do this once a month. We look through these old magazines, and the one thing we've learned is that back then they just said whatever they wanted. Yeah. There was so much wrong stuff in those magazines.
I would love to see some of the stuff I wrote back when I was starting out, not too long after this era, actually.
Yeah,
because it was the Wild West basically in publishing.
Sam, there's no.
I just wanted to see what game 100 was.
Yeah, I was going
to. I forgot. I meant to bring that up.
Faceball is 81, so you know it's going to get crappy out here. All right, it's Alien 3.
Wow.
Alien 3. Which is actually a good game. But
Super NES? I never played it.
Alien 3 is great.
Is it good?
I mean, if you asked 100 gamers to put together.
I might be thinking of Contra 3.
A top 100.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Contra 3.
Alien 3 is actually pretty good, but like, I don't.
Well, it's one better than Ultima Quest of the Avatar.
Mm. One worse.
That's right.
Yeah, that checks out. Sam, I know you're eager to dive into that Nintendo Power, but there's one more task at hand here. That brings us to video game 20 questions. Mm-hmm. Our suggestion this week comes from Rodney in Toronto. So we got a Canadian.
Oh,
we got a Canadian listener here.
All right.
Are you ready to just guess the game?
Have you played 20 Questions?
I have not played this game.
But do you know how 20 Questions works?
There's like, 17 questions?
Well, it's 20.
Is that a math?
I'm just taking a guess. Leave me alone. I'm tired.
Usually you're thinking of like a person, place, or thing, and then you have 20 yes or no questions to guess it. In this case, it's a video game, so at least you know that much.
Okay.
And we're asking you, so you have to come up with the game.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
All right. Does your character wear a hat or anything at all on their head? Is their head covering? Your character have head covering?
It's possible.
Is it possible for that game to have been in this issue of Nintendo Power?
possible. Let's see.
That means it's.
What are the restrictions around questions? It's like a yes or no.
Yes or no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damon's answer indicates to me that it's a game from this era earlier, but it's not a Nintendo game. So he's like, what are the odds that Wipeout on PS1 would
be better than zero?
But I'm trying to. How do you answer that question? Is it possible for it to have been in that issue?
You answer it with a yes.
Yes, I guess it is possible that it could have been in that issue.
Okay. It's like
possible.
In the letters section or something.
Is it polygonal?
Mm. Is it polygonal?
I don't think Damon knows what game this is.
I don't think so.
What?
Okay.
What?
Did this game originally appear on a Sega console?
Yes.
Sega, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't know if it's polygonal.
No, I said I don't think so.
That gets.
I didn't say I don't.
Sounds
know.
Like Vector Man to me.
Mm. No one knows how that game was made.
Did this game have sequels?
Yes.
Like Vector Man 2 and 3?
There's no 3.
Is this a side-scrolling game?
Yes.
Okay. Was this game originally released on the Genesis?
Yes.
It has sequels, huh? Does it have a sequel on the Genesis?
Yes.
It is looking a lot like Vector Man.
Was this a Sega-created title?
Yes.
See, I actually don't know if Vector Man was created by Sega.
It was developed by, I think, Blue Sky Software, which I'm just picturing the logo in my head from when I was a kid. But
Sega-created title.
I don't know if Sega published it or if they were involved in the actual development, because he was kind of a mascot, right? Does this game star a shitty green robot?
No. Oh. That's 10.
Sorry.
He's a man.
Is Mega Man a man?
It has a sequel on the Genesis that's made by Sega. There's not a lot of those.
It could be Sonic. We haven't eliminated that yet.
Mm-hmm. It's a side scroller.
Got sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Was this can't game, be Comic Zone.
Was it? Did you ask if it was developed by Sega, made by Sega?
I think I said created, but my intention was developed by like first party.
I don't know what to go with at this point.
Does this game star a hedgehog?
Nope.
Okay.
I was going to try and narrow it down by asking, is this game garbage?
Thank you.
Toe Jam and Earl?
I was thinking about them as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess that would have...
Anakin Funkatron?
There wouldn't have been...
But he wouldn't have paused about the polygonal thing, because it's like it's... And wait, we were talking about side-scrolling as well.
Top-down-ish. Cam, one of the things about Damon's answers is the idiosyncrasies of his pauses or not pauses or his answers just can't be taken into effect because there's no rhyme or reason.
So we're not necessarily narrowing down anything. Okay, good.
Well, just based off, like, you can, based off his yes or no's, sure, but not based off of any, sometimes you think, well, he looked at me a certain way when I asked.
Is this game in the Sega collections when we get them?
Ooh. Wait, well, what?
That's a good question.
You need to be a little bit more specific. Yeah.
Why? It's always the same 30 games.
When we get them.
Well, yeah,
was this in the latest Sega collection you reviewed?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's a really good question.
So it's Golden Axe.
Yeah, and that means that eliminates all the, like, you know, Lion King.
Didn't I ask if it was a... I asked if it was side-scrolling, didn't I? Okay, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'll be Golden Axe.
Can you play two-player?
Yes.
Does it have Gilius Thunderclad in it?
No.
Oh no! Wait.
I wish it was Golden Axe.
Yeah. What else was in the Sega collection?
What about
Altered Beast?
Oh, wait.
Altered Beast. Did that get a sequel?
Does it have two players?
Are there Ladies of the Night in this game?
Yes.
Streets of Rage.
Yes.
I'm thinking.
Did Sega make that?
That's 15.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yep.
Sega did make that.
Is this one of the greatest 2D brawler franchises of all time? Side-scrolling beat-em-ups?
Yes.
It's a simple yes or no question.
Streets of Rage 2, man. Ooh, that game's legit.
But which Streets of Rage is it? Because Streets of Rage 2 also got a sequel on the Genesis.
Yeah, but we've got enough questions to ask, is this the first game in the series?
But
one
wrinkle rule is that your final guess has to be the actual name of the game.
Okay.
Is it the original game in a series?
No.
So that means
I'm so happy we asked.
That means it's Streets of Rage 2 because 3 didn't get a sequel. 4 was just announced.
That's right. Could it be 3 though. No, got it on the Genesis. Is this Streets of Rage 2?
Yes.
Yes. I like how are there ladies of the night in this game was the question that really sealed the deal.
We got it.
How do you know it doesn't have Gilius Thunderclad in it?
Well, I'm pretty sure. He doesn't ever show up. 1992.
And guys, I hate to tell you this, but that took about 17 questions, so
Ooh, well done.
17
bang
questions, baby. We were playing 17 questions.
We were playing it all along.
This whole time.
It's the metric, 20 questions.
Well, Cam, I know you have a plane to catch back to Australia.
It was so nice popping in to be exhausted in front of your audience.
We really appreciate you making the trip, and maybe next week? Want to fly back next week?
Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah.
Why don't we just make you...
I've got unlimited budget right now. It's fine.
We'll make you a permanent member of the Scoop Crew and just plan to fly out every week from now on.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
We'll let your kids and family know.
Whoa.
What?
This just in.
Yep.
Mega Man 7 has a fighting game mode in it called Mega Man Fighter. They have the Nintendo Power calls it, where you put in a password and you can Mega Man and Bass fight in a Street Fighter style match. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
That's news to me. Well, yeah, try this out.
I guess maybe that'll work on the Legacy Collection.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out you can learn things from history texts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So
historical texts like Nintendo Power.
Exactly. This is a first-hand source.
All right. Well, that's all the scoops we have for this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Cam.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sam. Cam.
Hey,
my name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.